time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. No! Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to J-Guys and Jedi, a bi-weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. There will be assassins, clone feelings, and a whole lot of Yoda kicking butt. My name is Hope Molinax, and I'm here with the always awesome Chris Honeywell.
Always awesome, that's me.
Always awesome.
Even when I'm sleeping. I've been thinking of putting like a webcam on my, you know, over my bed to just have the awesome cam as I sleep, the always awesome cam. Look at him drooling onto his pillow so awesomely.
Oh my god, my mind went completely in a different direction. It went down.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, I would hang like a you know, like little Jedi symbol over the camera for any indiscreet moments.
Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi. We start our second episode with that.
It would be like the old TV stations. Where it's just like, ba-ba-ba, we'll be right back. Technical difficulties, we'll be right back.
It's okay, we just had a very riveting talk about meat before we started the episode. It's okay.
Smoked meat and meat covered with fat. Fat back.
Fat back.
What? There's got to come a day when there'll be a Two True Freaks food podcast, because that is... You know, nerd stuff binds us together, but everybody has different nerd stuff that they're into. And so you could have nerd stuff, a totally different collection of fandom than somebody else on Two True Freaks. But food...
Like a foodie podcast?
I haven't had one person... Well, I don't want it to be all foodie. I mean... it would be more of like talking about what we eat. So today we'd be talking about peanut butter tortillas and Pop-Tarts. And yes. Dreaming about meat and smoked chickens and deep fried spare ribs.
I have a very good ramen place that I went to for New Year's Day, and it was delicious. It's homemade ramen.
I've got three within walking distance of me. It's awesome. Yeah.
You know who is smoked meat I also love?
Who that?
Captain Rex's.
I've never heard of that. Is that a chain down there?
No, it's a clone. I want to.
Oh, Captain Rex. Meat. Yes.
Captain. I want his smoked meat.
It's a different. It's smoked clanker.
This is a weird start to this episode.
Yeah. It has nothing. So far, nothing we've talked about has anything to do with this episode. Which is an awesome episode.
Because we were talking about ambush today.
Well, sometimes you do ambush your meat. Back in the day, hunter-gatherer days, I guess. If you wanted to connect it.
You're talking about, like, surprising an erection. Like, hey! Yeah!
I'm talking about hunting. What are you talking about?
Surprise erections.
Although that does, there's a lot of directions you could go with that and surprising your meat. Are you surprising it in a good way or a bad way?
Oh, man. Woo. So today we're going to be talking about Ambush. We just finished covering the movie. We talked about the movie, the Clone Wars movie. I can't talk right now. I'm laughing about this meat.
Way to bring some dignity to the first episode of the Clone Wars TV show.
Oh, man, this is fun. Oh, so, hi, everyone. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedis, and today we're going to talk about Ambush. We just finished covering the movie. I'm sorry. We talked about the movie first and foremost, and now we're getting to the actual series. So, Ambush is the very first episode. Are you ready to talk about it, Chris?
I am ready to talk about it. As we were saying before, or as I was saying before we started recording, just randomly about 15 minutes ago, I was flipping through some of my Clone Wars books, and I found, and it's like a young adult formatted Star Wars book, this episode, Ambush, in the form of a photo novel.
Which is so cool.
And I bought such a huge pile of these this summer that I hadn't really gone through them enough to even know. I thought it was like the junior novelization of it. No, it's a nice little photo novel of an episode of Clone Wars, the first episode. And it's a really good one to do. It was a good choice to do a photo novel of, too. It's really fun and visually neat.
Do you want to hear what I got myself for a late Christmas present?
Yes.
So I went to Kroger's and they had Star Wars fleece pants and they were originally $30 and I got mine for $10 and it has Kylo and Phasma on them.
Whoa.
I know, they're so warm. Though they were boy cut. What's up with that? There's no girl cut. What's up with that?
I don't know. You would think they would you would think that they would realize that by now that girls do wear pajamas like that.
I know, and I was reading an article today about a little girl who wrote a letter to Hasbro because they got the Star Wars Monopoly, and it had Luke, Kylo, Finn, and Poe in it. And she was like, but I wanted Rey.
Who is the star of the movie?
Yeah, no and deal. We got in a Millennium Falcon toy at work today, and it's Chewie and Finn. And I was like, I love Finn. Don't get me wrong. Hardcore ship Finn Poe, but Finn never flew the ship.
Ray's the pilot now, yeah. Weird.
So, come on, Hasbro, get your shit together. But the other Christmas present I got myself is a Star Wars Rebel Ahsoka and Anakin action figures, and I put them up on my Instagram.
Ooh.
That was my... I told myself if we still had them at our store after Christmas, I would buy it for myself, and we did, so I got it.
Nice.
So... Did you have a good Happy New Year, Chris, by the way?
I did. I had a pretty low-key New Year's Eve. I worked on New Year's Eve and then came home and we had, if you were watching CNN that night, you saw we had a little terrorist scare in Rochester on New Year's Eve. So they canceled our fireworks for once. Usually in the, you know, New Year's Eve here at fireworks time, it could be snowy, windy. Also, a lot of times they get canceled because of bad weather. This year, it wasn't warm, but it was unseasonably warm and clear and no wind. It was just the perfect night for fireworks and didn't happen. But I did stay home and listen to the police scanner all night because my roommate was listening to it and I was like, that's a brilliant idea. New Year's Eve must be the most fun night to listen to a police scanner. And it was. It sure was.
Yeah, my New Year's, I worked that night and then my best friend came over and then the next day we got ramen and went to a hookah lounge and it was great.
We had a hookah lounge in Rochester. I'm not sure if it still exists. It might. I think it actually does. I've never been to it. Although I have smoked a hookah before. Mm-mm-mm. Like an actual, you know, not. And all the people who are like, oh, Chris likes drugs. It was an actual tobacco hookah. Smoking the, you know, the molasses tobacco and with the big charcoal disc.
We are still not talking about Clone Wars.
Yeah, I know. Well, hookah at least sort of relates to like something Jabba the Hutt would have.
I'm trying to see how you bring this back.
I know, and usually when we start tangenting like this, it means it's a boring episode or anything. But this is actually one of my favorite Clone Wars episodes. This is one that like a lot of it bleeds together in my memory. This one always has stood out to me, and it was funny because I did not remember when I popped this up as the first episode. I was like, oh, I did not remember this as the first episode that I watched, although it must have been. But the scene in one of the scenes in this has always, you know, starkly stood out in my Clone Wars memory. But we'll get to that when we get to that part in the story. But I love this episode.
Well, then let's get started then.
Yeah.
As we're 30 minutes in. All right. Ambush is the first episode of the Clone Wars series. It aired on October 3rd, 2008, and it's written by Stephen Melching. Dave Burlock is the director, and it's produced by the always wonderful Dave Filoni. It brought in 3.6 million viewers, and it was Cartoon Network's most watched series premiere at the time. Though it is the first episode of the series, Ambush is the ninth episode chronologically, being preceded by later episodes like Supply Lines. And something new that we're doing different, because the movie didn't have this, is we're going to give you the words of wisdom at the beginning of every episode. So, Chris, please take it away.
Yes, well, we're going to do it in the form of bad Yoda impression and with the words embed afterwards, because we're going to see how many of them fit that way. See how much of a roll we can get. Okay, so the tag word of wisdom of this one is great leaders inspire greatness in others in bed. One for one.
Oh, it's even better than I imagined.
We're one for one.
Yeah! All right, so.
They didn't have one for the movie. What a jip.
I know. What would it have been? Padawan saved the day.
Sometimes they don't even seem to like match up. It seems sometimes I just think they put them in a big tumbler. Sometimes they match up with the theme of the show. Sometimes it's just like, you know, life's a box of chocolates.
In bed.
In bed.
All right. So Act One. And I'm gonna say now I'm gonna butcher these names. Yoda is traveling to meet with King Kantuko of Toydoria. Kantuko. I should have re-listened to this episode, because I watched this episode like a week ago. Yoda is traveling to meet with King Kantuko of Toydoria. Toydoria! To negotiate the neutral planet in hopes that it will join the Republic. Asajj Ventress arrives first and connects them with Count Dooku. He tries to reason that his droid army is superior to the Jedi and the Republic. Yoda's ship is ambushed by Separatist cruisers. Launching all the escape pods, Yoda and a small group of clones flee to the planet while the others get away. Safely arriving, Yoda calls to say he's on his way. Asajj proposes a challenge. If Yoda can beat her droids and make it there by nightfall, Toydoria will join the Republic. If he fails, they'll join the Separatists. Dun dun dun.
I like it. For one, I was psyched.
A good episode.
I was so psyched that it was, you're basically getting a solo sort of, well, it's Yoda leading some clones, but your only major, you know, Star Wars character, canonical character, besides really Dooku, is Yoda. So there's no Anakin, no Obi-Wan, no Ahsoka, no R2, no 3PO, just Yoda. So, and I was primed for that, because you only got to see Yoda in, you know, in just a few select scenes in the movie. And yeah, you got to see him go into action, but you didn't really get to have much fun with Yoda, you know? And so this, right off the bat, it's like, this is a half hour show. You know, there's not going to be much messing around. It's going to be a lot of fun with Yoda. I was a little, at first, character wise, I thought Yoda was a little too quick to take up the challenge to play that game, you know, that Ventress and Dooku were playing with the manipulation of the negotiations. But as the episode went on, I was like, okay, I see why he's going to prove a point decidedly by doing it.
This is also a little bit of a younger Yoda too. I mean, this isn't like episode 4 Yoda where pretty much hell's happened and everything.
Yeah, it's Yoda at the peak on the way down, you know. The Clone Wars were the way down, on the way down for the Jedi, you know. They didn't know it yet. Well, I think Yoda had a pretty good idea, though, from the movies. But it's funny. He accepts a battle, and then the next thing you know, he's sort of talking the beauty, you know, commenting on the beauty and diversity of nature.
I really liked that part. Because, like, Dave Filoni was saying how in the early episodes he tried to make every planet look very different. Like, you know, like, this mm-hmm. is an ice planet. This is this. And for this one, it was a moon that was supposed to be a long time ago covered in vast oceans. So all the trees are dried up coral, which was just so cool.
Yeah. And they did a really nice job with the sound design of it, too, when they would knock one over and it would, you know, it would be this, like, super dry, bony, crackling sound, you know, like old dried out calcium coral.
Yeah. I really like a lot. I know some people are just like, you know, this is so early in the animation, so until you get to the later seasons when the animation is much nicer. But, I mean, they did a really great job with a lot of the planet designs this early on.
Well, that's the thing with CGI at this time is a lot of the backgrounds and the solidly modeled stuff they could do beautifully. They only really seem to have a problem with mouths and bodies, humanoid bodies. Mouths always seemed like sort of two lip lumps stuck on top of you know, a face moving at first. And you know, as the technology got faster and the people got more used to animating, they started becoming more lifelike. But when you would have a scene with spaceships or a planet or something, it would be beautiful. It would be almost be to the level of something you would see in one of the movies, if not, you know, up to that level, because
mm-hmm.
that stuff's just a lot. It doesn't have the uncanny valley because it does look exactly like it's supposed to. It's just so hard to get real fleshy faces moving, especially on a weekly TV show budget, which I'm sure the budget for this show was way beyond normal TV shows. But, you know, we're talking 2008, you know?
So. Yeah. I mean, I know that a lot of people gives the animation of Rebels a lot of knocks. And while it's not my favorite either, I mean, I think that Clone Wars and both Rebels are doing really well with the budget they have.
They have to get it done, you know? And so they have to sacrifice some reality. But that's the nature of cartoons, too. Cartoons aren't meant to be exactly, you know, if you're going for exact reality, then you're going for, you know, good chunks of episode 1, 2, and 3 that were, you know, for all purposes, all so close to being live action cartoons, you know, to being like Roger Rabbit flipped with the humans being the anomalies in the reality.
And I mean, you got to think, like, it's got to be, like, one or the other. I mean, I'd rather have, like, rough CGI than really bad story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And
I mean, do you remember that, like, really terrible Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within movie from, like, 2001?
Right, right.
Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous CGI. It was so realistic for the time. I remember just taking my breath away. The movie is terrible.
Right, and that was what they were pushing. I remember seeing the trailer for it in the movie theater, and I was with two computer geeks who did computer modeling, and they were like, "Oh my god, look at the faces on these things. I've never seen." And they were like, "We have to see this movie," and they were so I've never seen it. They were so disappointed when they saw it. And it's funny now when you see scenes from it. That's like, it's like cut scenes from a video game now, you know, compared to what we have today.
Yeah.
Compared to, say, Gollum in The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, or like Emperor Snoke or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even Snoke had a little bit of CGI feel to him.
Yeah.
Compared to some of the other characters. But I like how in Clone Wars and in Rebels that they've stylized it a little bit. It's fun. It's like reading, and I liked when Clone Wars was coming out, there were a lot of the comic books didn't follow the same look. They didn't look like, you know, CG pictures. They almost were sort of a combination of the character models from the TV show, but stylized in the way from the original Clone Wars.
Yeah.
So they were very like cell animated comic books, and they worked really good too. And they were aimed at younger readers, and they worked really good. They were very fast paced and, you know, short, snappy stories. And, it works. I was thinking today why these work as better Star Wars than the prequels. It's because they're half hour long. They have to tell their story real fast. They can't have any fat scenes that seem to drag on or go on any extra beats or anything like that. They have to keep it moving, which makes it feel very Star Warsy.
Yeah, and that's why I have some of those comic books too, and I absolutely love them. I love seeing when like CGI goes into a 2D animation almost.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing from the CGI go into the comic books is just like that. Like one of my favorite, like my top favorite movies of all time is Tangled. Rapunzel is my boo. That's my princess. But they have a new Rapunzel show coming out this year, and it's 2D animation, and I'm so excited to see how it translates.
Ooh.
I'm just gonna cry every episode. but yeah, I'm really glad they to touch back on an earlier point that they opened with Yoda. I mean, like, while we're still far, far away from season 6, and Clone Wars was supposed to go to 8 seasons to the Siege of Mandalore and everything. I mean, the very final arc of Clone Wars is also Yoda. So it's very nice to bookend the entire series with Yoda.
Yeah, and I like that they started this one off almost, in contrast to the movie, a lot more lightly and comedically. I mean, we started out in this one with droid slapstick right away. The droids are ridiculous in this episode. I've noticed that, like, droids start most of their sentences, the battle droids, most of their sentences with, and then they say something. And this is what I noticed first time watching through this, is it reminds me of Scott Gardner and I, as kids, we used to play a game called Robots. And we used to go in back of the AIM store down the street from Scott's house and pick out boxes, you know, giant packaging boxes, set them up like robots, and then drive our bikes through them. And as we would drive our bikes over them, they would, of course, always, and almost in battle droid voices, be, you know, no, mommy, I just got my parts maintenance. You know, it was always some last line before they got wiped out. And we try to wipe them out as spectacularly as possible. And I realize that's what they're doing in this. It's just like, it's like little kids playing with their toys. It's great.
It took me a long time to appreciate the droids, because I remember when I first watched the series, when it started back forever ago in 2008, they were really super annoying to me. When I was, you know, in my, like, late teens, early 20s, I was just like, these are really annoying to me. And I'm like, oh, they're making these just for the children. But, like, I appreciate them a lot more now because I'm not pompous and I don't take myself seriously anymore.
I didn't
like, they're really so much fun.
I didn't like the goofy droids as much in the movies as much as I like them in the TV show. I might be a hypocrite or something. In the context of the TV show, they were great.
Yeah, I think it's also like understanding the demographic. Because before we started recording, we were talking about Supergirl. I mean, and how, you know, I work in a comic book store and I have all these guys come in all the time. They're like, I don't really like Supergirl. And I always tell them, well, think about the demographic they're trying to tailor the show to. And then all the guys are like, yeah, well, I guess it's really doing really well then. Well, I mean, I get that a lot. I mean, about various things. Like Teen Titans Go is another thing. You know, if you're a fan of the old Teen Titans show, Teen Titans Go is like kind of like a slap in the face. I mean, it's awful compared to the old show, but you have to remember the demographic they're tailoring the show to. Like my nephew loves Teen Titans Go, and he's 8 right now, and I showed him the old Teen Titans, and it was too old for him.
He was bored, you know,
he wasn't there yet. And so when you actually think about Clone Wars, you have to remember that this is being tailored on a kids' network. We're not at the PG-13 vision that George Lucas had when he went out to make the show. We'll get there, but I kind of see the show kind of like the Harry Potter books, where you're supposed to read book 1 when you're 11, book 2 when you're 12, book 3 when you're 13, and so on and so forth. I mean, every season it gets a little bit older, a little bit darker, mm-hmm. and those kids who started watching in 2008, by the time you get to something like season 4 or 5, they're a little bit older and can take that material.
Mm-hmm. And they've been worked along with it, too, with the characters mm-hmm. and everything. Just so, another yeah. side note, I love the shot. I love any Star Wars shot through binoculars. So with the Toydarian King watching Yoda's ship coming into the atmosphere through the binoculars, I that always pushes my Star Wars buttons.
Yeah, I totally forgot that they did that, where, like, you could actually see up into the atmosphere, like, the low atmosphere, and I totally forgot they did that, and so when I saw it, I was like, that's so cool! I always forget they have that technology, but it's Star Wars.
And I like that the Toydarian King was not Watto, you know? He was a Toydarian, but Watto was a scrungy businessman, and this guy was, you know, more regal.
Yeah, and he had, like, a sense of... he had an air about him.
Yeah, he had a little more elegance to him. He still was sort of dressed in the same gear, but it was a little fancier, a little more ornate. But he had, you know, he was more intelligent, probably.
The only thing that was missing was a very, like, very nice embroidered nose ring on his long nose.
I would have loved to have seen what a Toydarian queen looked like. I wish the queen was there or something. I would have loved.
I don't think I've ever seen a female Toydarian.
I think I picture her looking like, if you ever saw the Bugs Bunny cartoon with the Tasmanian devil, and Bugs Bunny orders a Tasmanian she-devil from Acme. And they deliver it. I picture that's what a Toydarian woman would look like, except with wings hovering.
I just imagine the king with lipstick.
Big
and
red,
like,
lips.
Really, yep. Really, really thick blue eyeshadow.
Yep, yep. Sort of like E.T. when they dressed him up as a bag lady in the movie.
So did you have anything else about Act 1?
No, that's about all I got for this part.
All right, so Act 2, and I have a lot of notes for this one, I'm sorry now. Yoda chooses to go a longer way to meet with the king to avoid the enemy. He travels with 3 clones named Lieutenant Thyre, Jek, and Rhys. Hiding in the coral trees, the droid tanks are too big to reach our heroes. This will force the droids to move in smaller groups on foot. Yoda and his clones stage an ambush of their own to split up the droids and take out the first wave. Thyre is injured in the second wave, forcing our heroes to retreat. Entering a cave, Yoda discusses the clones' individualities. He wishes to get to know them on a one-on-one basis. He gives them each wise bit of information on how to better themselves for the oncoming war, saying, "Clones you may be, but the Force resides in all life forms." Oh my gosh, I love this entire section.
Well, this is the part that stuck with me through all of the Clone Wars, the scene in the cave. That was a scene that when that happened in the TV show, I was like, oh my God, I cannot, I'm so grateful that they're addressing this right now, because it needed to be addressed in the movies and they never touched it. And I wouldn't expect it to get addressed in the TV show the way it's been looking like it's going. And here he is, and finally we get to hear somebody, you know, start to talk about the clones, and are they all drones? Do they have value? Are they cannon fodder? And it's a complex little conversation, because at the same time, Yoda's leading lots of clones to their death, you know, and telling them. But I like his line of, like, to be successful is to survive, which comes back into Rebels. And then I was just like, oh, yeah, well, there were some that were successful.
Yeah, like this, if you heard the first episode, you know I'm a diehard clone fan. And, like, that's one of my favorite parts of Clone Wars, is the ongoing discussion of the clones and their personalities. I mean, this cave conversation is incredibly important, and it sets up many storylines for characters like Rex and Fives. I mean, it's something that the show does so well that the prequels failed at. Because we never got to know in the clones and the relationship with the Jedi. So, like, when Order 66 happens, you don't have the huge emotional impact of, oh, God, our friends yeah. are killing us. It's just like, oh, random yellow dude number 5 is killing me.
Yeah, and, well, Yoda even gives him a little hint of, like, you know, you're a clone and you're cannon fodder in an army, but if you survive, you know, there's still hope for another life, you know. That's just sort of implicit in what he says. Whether it's truly accurate or not could be debated, but that's a pretty, it's just a really complicated scene. It's done very simply, but it brings up complicated issues, and it's done in what, probably maybe like a minute long scene. It's just a really short scene in that cave. The shot bit, you see all the clone troopers, and they've all got their different haircuts. It's not, you know, incredibly deep, or it's very simple and like on the nose, but that's perfect for a half hour kid show. Really, that's like one of the scenes that when I remember the Clone Wars, that's the first scene that always plays in my head, is Yoda telling the clone troopers that they all have worth, you know, that he's not, that he doesn't leave people behind, and that, you know, they're not expendable.
I also just like how we're so early in the show that we're seeing the beginning relationships between the Jedi and the clones, because there's that part where like Yoda's being all, you know, mysterious, and he's just like, and the clones are
my God,
what the hell is he talking about?
It's the first...
Why is he just sitting there? What is happening? I don't understand. Okay, well, just shoot at the thing.
It's the first time we got to see Yoda giggle since Empire Strikes Back. Because in Jedi, he just dies. You know, he imparts information and dies. He's tired and sad. But in, you know, the beginning of Empire, he's joking and laughing and messing around with R2. And you finally, you know, I wish the scene, was it in episode 2 or 3 with the little Padawans with Yoda? It was in 2.
I am no help to you. It's been years.
In episode 2, where Yoda's training them all with the little balls. I wish it would have, I picture Yoda was teaching the younglings because he was Yoda. He would be more fun, you know, and humorful. So I've
can you imagine Mace Windu? He'd just be like, pick up your sword.
Yeah, it'd scare the hell out of him.
But you don't pick up your sword, you'll all die in this war. I'm Samuel Jackson, fool.
Look at me. Do I look like a bitch? Tell me.
I got a purple lightsaber, motherfucker.
Hand me that lightsaber over there. Which one? The one that says badass motherfucker on it. Yeah, kids would be duking their drawers.
Yeah.
But I'd been waiting to see the happy, funny Yoda for a long time, and he does that. He does that Zen prankstery sort of thing where he's just like, and runs off, you know? I was just like, yes! Yoda's having fun in this episode. He's having a riot.
That should be the name of the episode. Yoda has a riot.
He does. He has a riot. He has this huge army that he can just destroy, and they're robots, so he's just like, hey! I can have some fun with this. And boy, does he.
So I'm going to read this note because it's long and I put a lot of points in it. Okay. I'm just going to read right from my notes. I find it interesting that Yoda brings up that the Force is in all life forms. There's a Clone Wars comic that's not canon anymore. It was thrown out with the buyout. That's called Defenders of the Lost Temple, where a clone battalion runs into Pre Vizsla and the Death Watch. In it, there's a clone named Glitch who believes he's Force-sensitive. At the end, it's never clear whether or not he is. I love the idea of a clone becoming a Jedi. There's millions of clones out there. There had to be at least one. I've also been reading a fanfic by Ray the Watt Rider in Spricati, where Rex is gravely injured. Anakin does a blood transfusion to put his midichlorians in him, and Rex ends up becoming Force-sensitive. I haven't finished that yet, but it's a really awesome read. So the point of this point is that I really love the idea of a possible clone, Force-sensitive clone out there. And, you know, clones being Jedis. I love it. And those are some of my favorite fan arts. I have this great fan art of, like, Rex with a lightsaber. Ah, it was my background on my computer for, like, a month.
Yeah, I wonder if you got a Jedi blood transfusion. That would be interesting. People hunting down Jedis and stealing their blood. Yeah, almost like a True Blood story.
But I just, you know, like, with millions and millions of clones, there had to be at least one Jedi clone out there somewhere.
That's another whole thing, too, is just how much variation is there genetically in clones? You know, is there, you know, a clone technician maybe was having a, you know, was hung over after Space New Year's Eve or after Life Day or something and messed up a few of them. So some of them have some different genetics or something like that, you know.
Some, well, we haven't got
equipment as well one day.
far out, we do have the Bad Batch coming, which is one of the released episodes that would have been in season 6.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yes.
Yeah, I still haven't seen it yet. I'm holding those two, that and Utapau. I'm waiting to see those two until I get to them in my What the Fangirl reviews.
Well, if I recall, there's also a clone that goes bad somewhere in this first 3 or 4 seasons. There was a traitor clone somewhere in there, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's Slick. It's in season 1.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the Enemy Within, which is what I think it's called. It's because I remember that we actually talked about that in the Dragon Con panel, because Scott was like, you know, I find it weird that you're sad that this clone is evil. They're slaves.
Yeah, that's right. Not only did he sort of stood out by being evil, but by having some semblance of free will.
Yeah, I've always wondered, like, what makes, if the Force isn't everything, and if with enough time and practice, can anybody be a Jedi? Or do they have to have the right amount of midichlorians?
Yeah, I think you have to be adept at some level. It's just like you could learn a certain amount of gymnastics, but there's certain people born with that gymnastic body who are going to do the, you know, their body is built to do those tricks. So that's what I always thought Jedi were, in whatever way that it was to be a Jedi, whether you want to accept midichlorians or whatever, they had a genetic head start on everybody else, you know.
It's like the Inquisitors and Rebels. Like, they're all Force sensitive and they can use the Force, but Ezra is naturally gifted.
Right.
So I just love that idea. So Act 3?
Let's do it.
All right. So the droids show up with tanks. The clones are noticeably in better spirits, ready to take on the enemy. Yoda goes in first, taking out the majority of the droids. The clones see reinforcements coming. Using their last grenade, Thyr shoots out a rock ledge, destroying the rest of the droids. With sunset coming, they rush to meet the king. Seeing his results, King Kantuko tells Dooku he's joining the Republic. Ventress turns to kill the king, but Yoda arrives in time to save his life. He easily disarms her, but Ventress causes a distraction to get away. King Kantuko swears his loyalty to the Republic as reinforcements arrive to rescue them.
What I love about this is Yoda literally just brushes Ventress aside.
He makes her lightsaber go back into the holder thingy and just, she's done.
Yep. Just step aside, youngster, whatever. Would have been a fight if you had Anakin or Obi-Wan there, but with Yoda, he's just like, yeah. I love it. And then he refers to Dooku as his fallen apprentice. I like that.
You know, that was my only note about this, is I really want to know more about Dooku as Yoda's apprentice and, like, how he fell to the dark side.
Well, I think Yoda can almost refer... I think that's why they made Yoda the kindergarten teacher, so that they could... So Lucas could... You know, just basically every Jedi from that last group of Jedis for however long Yoda was kindergarten teacher can say they're an apprentice of Yoda. You know, mm-hmm. they were a Padawan of him, apprentice at some point in time. So,
but I get the feeling he's like Dooku to Yoda is like Anakin to Obi-Wan. Like, that was his Padawan.
Yeah, that's. That would be the coolest.
And then that's the thing. Like, that's something I just, you know, we never really got a lot of info on ever. So, I mean, I've always just wanted to know more about, like, how did Dooku fall to the dark side? How did Palpatine get his clutches on Dooku? Like, what was that relationship between... Can you... Because I just... Dooku's so serious all the time. I just see, like, Yoda pulling a little prank and just being like... and Dooku's just like, but Master! Master! Be serious!
You could totally... I can't remember where I was... I just can't imagine that there wasn't an EU novel on Dooku, because after episode 3, I mean, he was dead, you know, so there was no more, you didn't have to worry about changing his story arc or messing up, well, you could pretty much go anywhere with it, so I'm surprised there wasn't a Dooku novel. There might be, actually, there's so many of them, and I don't know anything about them.
Listeners, tweet us at JGuysAndJedi, which you can also follow us at JGuysAndJedi, because we have a Twitter! Woo! And let us know if there's an EU novel about this, because I really want to know.
Yeah, I like reading the synopses of the EU novels rather than the novels themselves, just to get the information from them.
Yeah, I mean, Wikipedia, there's so many.
Yeah.
There are just so many. Though I just finished my first EU novel, it was great.
Never been a big fan of most of them, of... Only made it through a few.
Do you know why I got this EU novel?
Because it's got Rex in it?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It was from his, No Prisoners, and part of it's from his point of view.
Oh.
It was interesting, because you got to see his point of view of, like, you know, I don't really quite like fighting this war all the time, and I kind of have an opinion, but I gotta keep my mouth shut. This war's not going great.
It sounds like it squares up with the Rex of Rebels.
Yes. Oh, I love Grunkle Rex. He's my favorite. He's having fun and fishing, and he's adorable. Oh man, I love Grunkle Rex. He's my favorite. I cry every time he's on screen.
Everybody loves them clone grandpas.
I love him to death. I wish Gregor and Wolf came, but they're fishing still. No, it's true. Dave Filoni said it in Rebels Recon. Or maybe it was Pablo. I think it was Pablo that said it. But he was like, because they got a question like, you know, where is Gregor and Wolf? He's like, they're still fishing. He's like, yay! They're done. So, that was all I really had about this last section, was I just want to know more about Dooku and Yoda.
Yeah.
I like that the clones found their mojo. Oh, this episode should be called How the Clones Got Their Groove Back.
Yeah. It's funny. This one went a long way towards humanizing clones and the robots. Robots did a lot of talking in this, even some of the bigger battle droids.
I do have a question. I just thought of this question, because I'm going to ask this the same question about a different character in the next episode. If someone didn't see the Clone Wars movie, and this was their first time seeing Asajj Ventress, what would you be their impression of her? Because she is kind of... not great in this one. And
female
I love
Darth Vader. She's sort of a female Darth Vader, except she's really a flunky in this one. She just does not deliver at all.
Yeah, like, she's so inept. Like, you know, if you didn't see the movie, you saw her, you missed her badass fight scene with Obi-Wan. And you missed all that. Like, this, she shows up. She makes a bet, and she loses, and then Yoda puts her in her place, and she's a child.
But the thing is, I think if Dooku was there, Yoda still would have spanked him, you know? I mean, it was Yoda. And mm-hmm. Ventress had her, her army to work with, but you were done from the get-go, because it was Yoda. And Yoda had a whole army of... you know, a whole regiment of clones with him too. So on top of it. So, I mean, yeah, she failed. She could have done better. I mean, really, what could she have done? She could have killed the Toydarian king sooner. As a matter of fact, I was thinking about halfway through this episode, it was just like, why don't they just kill the king? He seems to be leaning.
Well, they wouldn't get Toydaria on their side then.
Right. But they were at a certain point. It was becoming obvious that Yoda was just gonna thrash her, and that she would probably get to that point anyway. I was like, you know, this king's in kind of. I was thinking this isn't a very tactically smart way for. But the king didn't know Ventress was coming either. But I was like, you know, if this goes south, they're just going to kill him, you know? And so that wasn't a big surprise when Dooku gave that order. But that was the only place where maybe she could have reacted a little faster. But once again, Yoda came into play there. And once Yoda came into play, he literally just, like, shoved her aside and was just like, she was lucky she got out of there. It was very surprising that Yoda didn't just, like, stuff her into a box and take her back to the Jedi, you know, for Jedi Temple for questioning.
Yeah, I have to say that her only really cool point in this is that it showed how crafty she was to get away. Like, you know, of course, the king didn't know that she was showing up, but she had at least planned far enough ahead to plant a grenade to cause a distraction.
To get out of there, yeah.
So that's about her only cool point. So I have to say, like, this is not Asajj's best. I'm glad she goes up from here.
I also think that the Sith pull the dick move where they'll set up an apprentice for failure, because that way they can keep him at a disadvantage and be just like, you know, when you come back, we'll discuss your failure. You know,
yeah.
And always keeping the upper hand. Because let's face it, the Sith are dicks, basically.
Yeah. What are your final thoughts about the episode as a whole?
Loved it. I loved it, loved it, loved it. Anytime I enjoyed this experience of Yoda in action way more than I enjoyed, although I did enjoy, you know, the episode 2, the famous scene where Yoda fights Dooku, and there where it's the first time you see Yoda wield a lightsaber and go into action. I thought this was much better done. There was that one brilliant, I forgot to mention it, the brilliant scene where Ventress is watching the transmission of the droid and Yoda jumps into one of his hands and then across into the other hand and beheads him while he's talking to her.
Yeah.
It's great. That's a beautiful little scene. All the while you can see her face getting angrier and angrier.
I love the part where Yoda's inside the ship and you just see the back door open and the droids are trying to run and they just get sucked back in. Body parts come flying out of the ship.
He's playing. He's literally playing and having fun. He's like, "Wee! Ha-ha!" It's great. It was a great way to start off the show. I thought it was kind of a brave way to start off the show because it didn't start off with the main characters at all, you know?
And I thought that too. It's a great opening for the series. You have a classic fan favorite with Yoda, and it sets up a lot of like the main storylines, like with the clones for the entire series. And you get to see the beginning struggles with Ventress and Dooku. But overall, it's just a really fun Star Wars romp, and it never really has like high stakes.
Yeah, you pretty much know Yoda. Well, you know, it's Yoda, and it's Yoda between episode 2 and 3, so he's coming back for 3, so you know Yoda's coming out of it alive. It's just the enjoyment of seeing the process of Yoda taking out a battalion of clones. It's very similar to the original Clone Wars cartoon, the first one, where Mace Windu does the same thing, just defeats a whole vast field full of robots, you know, in a 5-minute clip, and it's beautiful.
So what would you rate this episode, Chris?
I would rate it a perfect 5 out of 7.
A perfect 5 out of 7?
It's from this horrible internet troll story that I read of somebody. But yeah, a perfect 5 out of 7.
That's pretty much where I was. I had about an 8 out of 10.
A very, very strong beginning. Way stronger than the movie.
Yes.
In the half hour of this, it piled on way more Star Wars than the whole movie.
And you're talking about
the Clone Wars movie from the last episode.
Well, if you have nothing else, where can people find you?
You can find me and Hope at twotruefreaks.com, where we have a list of all our plethora of podcasts and you know, Hope has her own podcast, Hope of All Trades.
Which I'm not so far behind on.
She's so far behind on it, but if you're not familiar with it, you got all the back episodes to go through, and Who True Freaks and It is about 35. There's probably about 25 active podcasts right now. You can find, if you search for Two True Freaks on iTunes, you'll find us.
And you can follow us on Twitter at JGuysAndJedi. And you can follow me on Twitter at Hope Molinex. And I also write for WhatTheFangirl.com, where I actually do Clone Wars season recaps. And I'm working on season 3 right now, so.
And I've read quite a few of your blogs over there. They're great. So everybody needs to go check those out.
Well, thank you. I took a holiday break, so I'm starting to get back into the groove again, so.
One day when I get my shit together, we'll have our own Two True Freaks blog, blogosphere. Bloggerama.
It'll be fun. Well, I guess that's it for us. And I can't remember if we had an end tagline. Pew, 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 pew. That's the sound of, like, blaster fire. Pew, pew.
They know what the pew is.
Pew, 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 pew.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
And this is your Uncle Don saying good night.
Good night, little kids. Good night.
We're off?
Good. Well, that ought to hold the little bastards.